Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations.
This episode of Groundwire was produced on traditional territory of the Stolo Nation in Abbotsford, British Columbia. We're your hosts, Sam O'Dell, Raina McIver, and Cameron Schmidtke.
In this week's episode, live coverage of the Sisters in Spirit Vigil in Montreal, and a report back from the people who traveled to support the Standing Rock Sioux Nation in the protest against the Dakota Access Pipeline. But first, here are the headlines.
Our first headline comes from Lindsay Nixon at CKUT in Montreal about the honoring of Indigenous women artists at Ottawa's Missing and Murdered Women and Girls Vigil.
My name is Annie Pichulashuna Khimiata Kunu Putugu. I'm an artist. My mother's name is Napatsi Putugu, and my mother was the artist, and my grandmother Pichula Asuna was the artist. I'm a third generation artist.
Inuk artist Annie Putuguk will be honored today at a tribute of the annual vigil for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls at Parliament Hill. Annie Putuguk was identified as the woman whose body was found in Ottawa's Rideau River on September 19th. The artist from Cape Dorset in Nunavut had attracted international acclaim for pencil crayon drawings that depicted the realities of life in the modern North. Her work boldly returned the gaze, confronting the viewer with the realities of Inuit people from the North, breaking the barriers between them, confronting the viewer with complex snippets of everyday Inuit life, the good, the bad, the silly, and the love. Although Putuguk's death was initially said to not be a homicide or suspicious, police later said the case was not clear-cut, and there are elements that warrant further investigation. The police have been criticized for the treatment of the case, with community members saying that Annie's death was unfairly investigated because she was an Anuk woman. This was only intensified when Ottawa police acknowledged that one of their members was under an investigation stemming from a complaint from the chief of police over racist online comments posted in response to a story about the death of Annie Putuguk. The officer wrote in a Facebook comment, quote, "It's not a murder case. It could be a suicide, accidental. She got drunk and fell in the river and drowned, who knows. Typically many Aboriginals have very short lifespans, talent or not." Bridget Tolley, one of the vigil's organizers, says that the problem is actually systemic. Tolley is fighting to see that the deaths and disappearances of Indigenous women are being investigated properly. Her mother, Gladys Tolley, then 61, died on October 5, 2001, after she was struck by a Quebec police cruiser as she was walking across the highway.
On Thursday, October 6, the Supreme Court of British Columbia rejected efforts by a Vancouver-based mining firm to dismiss a lawsuit brought by three Eritrean men who alleged they were forced to work at the firm's Bisha mine in Eritrea in the Horn of Africa. In 2013, Human Rights Watch reported that Vancouver-based Nevsun Resources Limited failed to ensure that forced labor was not used in the construction of its mine in Eritrea. The report said that Eritreans were conscripted into working, some of whom were forced to labor for over a decade, faced torture and other serious abuses, and revenge extracted on their families if they deserted their posts. In the recent case, Nevsun petitioned that the case should be dismissed in Canada and instead heard in Eritrea, though this proposition was rejected by the Supreme Court because they were not convinced that plaintiffs could be provided the opportunity for justice in Eritrea. In a related groundbreaking decision, the Supreme Court determined that claims of crimes against humanity, slavery, forced labor, and torture can go forward against Nevsun. It is the first time that a Canadian court has recognized that a corporation can be taken to trial for alleged violations of customary international law, and marks the first time that a mass tort claim for modern slavery will go forward in a Canadian court, and also the first time a case against a mining company for alleged abuses in overseas operations has been allowed to proceed in British Columbia. In the judgment, Justice Arbrot cited the conclusions of a recent United Nations Commission of Inquiry into the human rights situation in Eritrea. In June 2016, the commission found that the Eritrean government has been responsible for crimes against humanity, including its nationwide system of indefinite conscription. The commission concluded that the government of Eritrea employs totalitarian practices and that enslavement has been committed on an ongoing, large-scale, and methodical basis. This will make way for the original lawsuit by the Eritrean miners to move forward. It was originally filed in November 2014 and alleges that Nevsun engaged two Eritrean state-run contractors and the Eritrean military to build the mine's facilities and that the companies and the military deployed forced labor under reprehensible conditions. This ruling now makes way for several cases in Canada against companies accused of responsibility for severe human rights abuses abroad. Three lawsuits in Ontario alleging that Hudbay Minerals is liable for killing and gang rape in Guatemala are now moving towards trial.
That's it for the headlines. We'll be right back after this. You're listening to Groundwire, broadcasting community radio news from coast to coast.
Our mother grows angry. Retribution will be swift. We squander her soil and suck out her sweet black blood to burn it. We turn money into God and salivate over opportunities to crumple and crinkle our souls for that paper, that gold. Money has spent us, left us in small boxes, dark rooms, bright screens, empty tombs, left investing our time in hollow philosophies to placate the fear of our bodies returning back into our mother. Demand awakening. The path we have taken has rotted. Ignite, stand upright, and conduct yourself like lightning because the retribution will be swift.
You just heard Retribution by Tanya Tagak. Now it's time for our feature stories.
Protests continue at Standing Rock, North Dakota, against the Dakota Access Pipeline, which, if built, will pass through the Standing Rock's Sioux sacred sites and burial grounds. Indigenous leaders have been traveling to show solidarity from across Turtle Island, the Amazon, with more than 250 Indigenous nations present. Evelyn Camille and Deanna Appoint joined Gunari O'Sullivan on When Spirit Whispers to share their accounts of visiting Standing Rock. This feature was produced with files from Co-op Radio in Vancouver by Groundwire National Coordinator Braden Alexander.
Here we are, 2016, in the midst of Standing Rock and protecting Mother Earth. Are you getting a totally different vibe here, Deanna?
Totally different vibe.
Isn't it amazing?
I think because our generations coming up are so passionate about bringing back our medicines, our ceremony, our old ways of life, the language, that when, you know, there's upheavals, like even at Standing Rock, how proud and how it creates this bond to the earth to make it all come together again. And in a nonviolent way, in a prayerful way.
And it's three times as powerful, actually.
Yeah, it's huge. The experience down in Standing Rock, talking to some of the Standing Rock elders, you know, they were so grateful for all the nations that had come there, you know. They said, you know, even though that there's a little bit of left wing or, you know, a little bit of militant kind of presence, they said, one fellow told me, they need that because that's what brings the news there. He said, sometimes we pray and pray, but you need to have those prayers out into the media, out into the world. So with the presence of some of the strong militant speakers, it brings it more to the outside what Standing Rock is about. Well, my ancestral territories is Fort McMurray First Nations, Anzac. And in Anzac is the heart of the oil field. So we are going through, my family from there are going through all the fracking that's going on, you know, all the disturbance of the land through the oil industries. And it's hard because a lot of the people, they don't understand that land is going to be no good in 50 years. That land is... When the oil is gone, it'll take another 50 years. So we're already talking 100 years. So in another 150 years, then it might be habitable again, you know? But a lot of the people there, they see the money. And you know, because it started and there is no change up there right now because it has already gone through.
Well, you see, what I'm wondering is how do we as Canadians get people to come to our territories in support of our struggle and the same numbers that the people of North Dakota have managed to do? Do you know?
Through this action in North Dakota is going to show a lot of our people, Canadian people, that we can come together just the same.
Awesome.
And you know...
Hmm? Awesome.
Yeah, and we're creating alliances through all of Turtle Island.
Exactly.
But here, I'm going to let you to speak to our elder, Evelyn Camille, right now.
Okay, well, thank you, Deanna. Gaila Kasla.
Okay, Mosisho.
I'm from Kamloops, British Columbia. I belong to the Kamloops Indian Band. And I said, I'm going. So I got a hold of Kananoose and rearranged... couple of cars to go down to pick up whoever was determined to go down there. We've been down there for how long?
Since the 17th or something like that.
Okay, we've been down there for a while. I quit counting the days. But anyhow, we're on our way home. And that was my deep concern about how the way they were treated by the state police down there. You know, that should never, ever happen to anybody. Which surprised me because Obama had promised equality throughout all nations. I remember listening to him when he first got in, and I believed him. But, you know, I went down there to support the people at the camp spiritually, mentally, and physically, most of all. And so I hope... I hope I can go down there again to support them because they're going to be staying all winter, and I understand their winters there are very cold and long, and my support is still with them, and I'm going to do what I can once I get home to raise funds to help keep the camp going.
Wow, that's beautiful, Camille. I mean, Evelyn.
There
is a need right now for all of us to connect the dots from, you know, North Dakota to the Enbridge pipeline to the Site C dam and to export and import even, you know, the our own laws here are being superseded by corporations. And how do we get around all of this and where do we start?
We fight.
Our second feature comes from Hanaka Matani at CKUT in Montreal, reporting on the 11th annual Sisters in Spirit Vigil, held on October 4th to honor the lives of missing and murdered Aboriginal women and girls.
Please tell us about your organization and the event tonight.
Yes. So I work at the Center for Gender Advocacy as Action Coordinator, and the center is... an organization that's funded by Concordia students, and we work to challenge gender oppression So we have two campaigns. One is Missing Justice, Justice for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, which is a solidarity collective, aggressive solidarity collective, and also a campaign of the center. We also have A Safer Concordia, which is a campaign that challenges sexual violence on campus and in the community. And every October 5th for the past, this is now the 11th year, we've been organizing the October 4th March for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. And we are seeking to raise awareness about the systemic nature of violence and the way that media, government, the legal system, police forces, and the education system facilitate this violence. And we also want to honor the memories of the women who have been murdered and have gone missing.
So, why did you get involved in this organization?
Well, I have done a lot of work that focuses on the gendered impact of resource extraction, specifically with Indigenous people in Guatemala, and also had done support work, survivors of sexual violence. And so for me, this is a continuation of that work.
And what do you expect from this event?
I expect that this event is going to bring people together to support each other and to highlight how this is an issue of ongoing concern for both family members that are directly impacted as well as other Canadians. And that it will be an opportunity for all of us to come together and to hear from Indigenous people directly what are their thoughts and hopes around the national inquiry that was recently announced and started, and show how we can hold the government accountable in that process.
And I read your website and I learned media also facilitate violence. Why could media do that, and what can we media do from now?
So from my, looking at the media, often the representations of Indigenous people are not very positive. In the cases of Indigenous women, the cases are not often taken seriously, and there is a mischaracterization of Indigenous people. So I think it's important to have many diverse stories, not only about the negative things that are happening to Indigenous people, but also stories that show complexity of Indigenous communities as exists in many communities. So this includes the beautiful, positive things that are also happening as well. And hearing directly from Indigenous voices is also really important.
Hello, Sakut. I'm originally from Fort Smith, Northwest Territories. My mother is Inuvialuit and my father is Chippewyan Dene from Alberta. This is my daughter, Sierra Uluriak. This is my little daughter, Nevea. And a lot of our Inuit women, unfortunately, make a big part of the missing and murdered women. My niece, who was 15, was found dead in the bushes after days of being missing. And on the streets of Montreal, a lot of our women go missing from their families up north, never to be seen again. Only to be seen, their photos are shown in the Gazette or in the news after they've been found. So in honor of their lives that have been lost, in honor of all women who are struggling in very difficult situations. And it's also a prayer that what we want out of this inquiry and the actions that we want out of this inquiry happen. We're going to be doing some throat singing, and this is to honor all the missing and murdered Aboriginal women. The song that we're going to sing, it's called The Love Song, and it's to send out positive energy and protection.
Now it's time for our Community Radio Report, with Catherine Fisher at CJLY, celebrating the 15th anniversary of Nelson's Co-op radio station.
In 1996, a handful of people came together to discuss the possibility of starting a community radio station in Nelson, a small city of 10,000 people, in Sinaik's territory in what is now called British Columbia. Kootenai Cooperative Radio was registered as a co-op in 1998 and received a broadcasting license from the CRTC in 1999. With the aid of three repeater transmitters, Kootenai Coop Radio, also known as CJLY-FM, now broadcasts to Nelson and 16 smaller communities in the region. This year, the station is celebrating a milestone birthday. The station's summer news interns, Sienna Drake and Spencer Legobokov, spoke with several of Kootenai Coop Radio's volunteers who talked about why they got involved with the station. Neil Sorokin has been a music programmer since the year 2000 and has also served on the board of directors, tech committee, and as a morning public affairs show host.
By the time I was in my early teens, co-op radio and CITR radio were sort of pretty amazing hubs for countercultural stuff that you wouldn't necessarily hear on commercial radio. So I became aware of the concept of co-op radio from Vancouver Co-op Radio. And then following moving here and shortly after seeing a movement afoot locally to bring that same concept here, it seemed like a natural fit to get involved.
Deb Kozak is the current mayor of Nelson. She hosted Kootenai Coop Radio's morning show for several years, starting in 2002.
When I first ran for election and wasn't elected, that was in 2002, and Bill Metcalf approached me after the election. He said, would you consider coming on Nelson Before 9 as a radio host? And I hadn't thought of it before, and I did, and I'm glad I did it. I think it was working with a strong group of volunteers and really committed people. And the caliber of the show when I was working, and still, I believe, was very high. And I learned a lot about journalism and objective reporting in the time that I served.
Bill Metcalf started his time at Kootenai Coop Radio as the host of a jazz music program in 2000. He became interested in radio journalism and, among other things, started the station's first public affairs program, The Orange Bridge.
What it meant to me was that I felt kind of at the center of things in some ways, news and social affairs wise in Nelson, you know? So I felt good. I felt like I was doing what I wanted to do and learning more all the time about it. You know, I was feeling like a journalist, which was a good feeling. As a result of the stuff that I taught myself here, I ended up doing some radio professionally elsewhere after that.
Bonnie Baker has been a music programmer for several years on Kootenai Coop Radio and has also served on the board of directors and programming and fundraising committees.
I've learned a lot since I've been here. Well, it's not just KCR because, of course, we're part of a community and campus radio system. And but to be in Nelson, to be in this great little radio station here is just a treat. I'm a feminist of long standing and what I could do. My first shows were feminist music then and now, and I could do it, and I can say what I want. It's just the sound of women's music on the air is, that's my main focus.
Zoe Creighton is a founder of Kootenai Coop Radio and has contributed to the station in many ways.
People have stories to tell. People have opinions to share. People have questions to ask, and to be able to do that to a broad group of people in a supporting environment and throw some good music in. I think it's a really attractive thing for people to do and to feel like they're part of something. They're part of creating something.
One, two, three, go.
Kootenai Coop Radio.
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 You are listening to Kootenai Coop Radio.
Kootenai Coop Radio.
Community powered 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 radio.
This has been the Community Radio Report, produced by Catherine Fisher at CJLY on Sinaik's traditional territory in Nelson, BC. Thanks to Sienna Drake and Spencer Legobokov for files.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced at CIVL on Stolo Nation Traditional Territory in Abbotsford, British Columbia. Music this week was by Tanya Tagak and Gal Grayson.
Headlines this week were written by Lindsay Nixon at CKUT.
We'd like to thank all of our contributors, as well as Cameron Schmidtke, Raina McIver, Sam O'Dell, Hanaka Matani, Jeneba Dale, Ami Selma Ramtula, Carly Forbes, Gretchen King, Catherine Fisher, Gunari O'Sullivan, and Groundwire's new national coordination team, Glenn S. and Braden Alexander.
Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca.